From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh! Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and gender non-defined people, to the show that is all about board games, card games, dice games, role-playing games, anything you can do in, around, on, under, through, or in parallel universes with a table. You are with the Dice Men Cometh. It is tonight, presented by Mark.
Yes.
And Garth. Mm. And not Leon, because Leon, as of 6 a.m. this morning, was on not one, not two, but multiple planes to get from here to the goddamn USA.
Wow.
And then on to Canada. So Leon is currently somewhere over the ocean, possibly waving at Hawaii, because he is about to start his multiple-week holiday through North America to go and see a whole bunch of people wearing a whole bunch of spandex.
This is not superheroes. This is wrestling. Although they are superheroes to Leon, of course.
On an unrelated note, someone else was due to fly to America yesterday, and that is a good friend of the show, Alan Chang. He wasn't able to because there were some technical issues, but he's flown out today and that is all okay. So hopefully, Alan, you'll arrive in LA and you'll have a wonderful time with your family.
Well, good to see that Alan is not the only one having technical issues, because here in the Edge Radio studios tonight on the 28th of March for episode 255, it seems like the Dice Men Cometh sting, that ukulele that you all know and love, somehow doesn't exist anymore. The computer thinks it exists, but when I click on it to play, it vanishes into thin air.
As they say in the travel agent world, computer says no. So look, it is episode 250, what?
Five.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it is the 28th of March, and look, it is the Dice Men Cometh. Australia, knee. The Southern Hemisphere's amazingest, most tabletopiest radio show and podcast. And before we throw to a song, Mark.
Yep. Oh, BorderCon.
We had a week off.
We did.
Due to Edge Radio technical issues. Mm. So we have decided to give you guys an extra week to get these BorderCon entries in. Now, for anyone who the first time listening, BorderCon is some of the best 4 days of gaming that you could ever have in Australia, and is over the Queen's Birthday long weekend on the border in Albury.
I've just put in my leave, taking the Thursday and the Tuesday so I can A, get ready, and B, recover from what is Australia's best playing board game convention, as far as I am concerned.
Well, based on last year's effort, you needed a recovery day. So look, our competition, yeah, for anyone who is interested, you have until Wednesday, the 3rd of April, to send us, yes, us, an Instagram or a Twitter or a Facebook or a Gmail post, quite simply saying, what game would you like to play with the Dice Men? Because you'll probably beat us. We have been getting a whole bunch of entries from all of those pre-said, yes, Insta social media platforms. And this time next week, we will be announcing the winner of the only two tickets that are available in Tasmania, in Australia, in the Southern Hemisphere, in the Northern Hemisphere, in both hemispheres, in our planet, full stop.
And for those of you who don't know, so we go live to air Thursday at 7 p.m., which means we're going to make the cutoff Wednesday.
The 3rd.
Wednesday the 3rd at midnight. Australian Eastern Standard Time. So that is the cutoff for the BorderCon competition. Now, we've got some great entries, but don't let that put you off, because we're easily swayed. We have short attention spans, but this is something that should not be missed. This is your chance if you've never been. Now, we know, just talking to some friends of ours recently who would like, oh, I bought my BorderCon tickets, but I didn't get any accommodation. Mm. And bang, they were able to get accommodation just like that. So don't be concerned that, you know, if you win the tickets and you're only 2 months out, you're not going to be able to get accommodation in Albury. You absolutely, well, I can't give you a an ironclad guarantee. But the spies tell me that there is accommodation out there.
And look, if you need some, we always make sure that Mark is in his own room because he's a bit of a snorer. So you might be able to put your swag down in his room, but I don't recommend it. So look, BorderCon competition, the clock is very much ticking in this situation. So anyway, go and put your entries in to dicemencometh@gmail.com. Search the Twitters and the Instagrams for @dicemencometh. Stick it on our Facebook page if you're not a fan or a friend of the Dice Men Cometh on Facebook. Just join and then send us a post. We'll happily go, ha-ha, lol. And on that note, we have to go to a song and then come and talk about a game that we actually have been playing lately for birthdays, very early birthday celebrations, because he's flying off to America, if you didn't know.
Mm.
You're with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. And we'll be back shortly.
Hi, this is Matthew Dunstan, and you're listening to the Dice Man Cometh, the best podcast in Australian board gaming.
Oh, that was Kings of Leon with the bucket, especially for Leon. As we said, travelling in a, not in a bucket, but in a tin tube.
A flying vertical cylinder.
At 30,000 feet somewhere across the Pacific on the way to you in the USA and Canada. And we're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We're here to talk about card games, board games, role-playing games. But Garth, we have got a behemoth of a game that we played at Leon's very premature birthday celebrations on the just this weekend past.
Yes. So, look, I've debated whether or not I should play the role of Garth or Leon in this particular situation. I'm going to go with Garth, but I might throw in a hint of Leon depending on how the conversation goes. So, look, Leon does have a remarkable ability on or around his birthday to throw a 12-hour gaming bonanza known as Live Fast or Game Young or something like that. I don't know. What it means is we have to turn up somewhere and play some games until we get kicked out.
Yes.
That's pretty much it. His lovely wife, Sarah, and himself turn up with multiple suitcases of multiple games.
So many
and
games.
And it's just a free-for-all, and it is a wonderful, wonderful day. Now, on this particular day, which was only on Saturday a few days ago, Leon pre-arranged that myself and Mark and himself and then indeed your lovely partner Sarah would sit down and play Holas.
Holas.
Or as they say in the long form, Heroes of Land, Air and Sea.
So hot right now.
It's very hot. And what is this particular game that we're talking about? Well, look, it's by Tasty Minstrel Games. It is designed by Scott Alms. Now, those two things should go ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling because almost every gamer on the planet in the last couple of
years... Did you say Tasty Minstrel Games?
Yes.
Gamelin Games.
TMG? Anyway.
Gamelin
Games. Gamelin Games.
That's because we were just playing the fantastic game Crusaders by TMG, and it's going viral right now on Instagram because TMG have reposted our little video. But Gamelin Games and Scott Alms, they are the tiny little factory.
Tiny epic indeed, and that's where I was going so inappropriately and incorrectly because anyone who has played a tiny epic game has played a Gamelin game.
You are channeling Leon, aren't you?
I did it even subconsciously, far out. I love Leon, but not that much. And Scott Alms has designed a hell of a lot of games. So in this game, you are doing everything that is not tiny, but you are doing a hell of a lot that is epic because Heroes of Land, Air and Sea is the 4X style of board game with minis that tells the tale of epic battles between orcs and humans, dwarves and elves. You've got battling kingdoms, and you've got these heroes that will change the course of battle. So, Mark.
Garth.
Pop quiz hot shot.
Yep.
What does 4X mean?
Explore, expand, exploit, exterminate.
Correct. And that is very simply what you will be aiming to do, indeed one of those particular four things, because in the base game, which is all we're going to talk about tonight, one to four players are going to be either trying to explore everything that you can, or expand as far as you possibly can, or exploit every single resource that you can, or exterminate Mark or any other player that you can, because Heroes of Land, Air and Sea is that particular game where one to four players are going to start, you're going to open up a double-sided board and start on your own little idyllic island full of resources.
That's all we're going to do?
No.
Isn't that enough?
No. You're going to start quite sedately and quite calmly because this game, which it says 120 to 180 minutes, which on your first game, it's going to go a little
bit. Yeah, that's for sure.
In this game, you will be trying to be the winner and get the most victory points, not surprisingly.
How do we get victory points in this game, Gar?
Well, look.
There's a number of ways.
Let me get my bit of paper, Mark, and tell you all the research that I've done. On this particular turn game involving far out so many miniatures and such a big map and all of the things that you're going to be doing, the turn sequence is quite simple. You're going to do some stuff, you're then going to collect some stuff, and then you're going to move to the next player. And really, that's it. But it's kind of not, because the board is going to start with so much hidden information in the resource realm, and you're all going to start deliberately isolated so that you can't just go and get your daggers out and fight each other right away from turn one. You're going to have to build up your deliberate empire.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you're going to do that is because everyone's going to have this beautiful, large individual player board, which will be one of the four races where you've got the humans and the orcs and the elves and the someone else's, and you're just going orcs. To...
Orcs, elves, dwarves and humans. There were four.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah.
And you're going to spend so much time building up this delicious empire that you've got and then fighting people and then watch it all burn down because the orcs, Mark, are yes! terrible things. Now, this game sounds very, very simple because on your turn, you've only got a very limited selection of eight things. What I love about it is that four of those things are called capital actions.
Ah, because you're in Das Kapital.
And that is just growing your own little economy. So, for example, each player in a round is going to have two actions that they can do. One of those actions could be to recruit, which means that you spend some of the resources, and resources are food and mana and ore, to or get what? More people. No jokes.
Okay.
So get more serfs, get more warriors, or if you've been able to accrue large amounts of stuff, you can get some of your heroes.
I
and everyone,
need a hero!
Everyone has a couple of heroes that can drag in, but you're probably not going to start with that. Or if you don't want to recruit some things, you can build up your city. So you can build new buildings in your capital.
Mm.
Or you can build towers in these far-flung regions of the empire, which will cost you sometimes a little and sometimes a lot. But again, they're going to cost you resources, primarily either serfs, which are your bog-standard people that you have, or sometimes mana.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's surfing now.
Otherwise, you can research. And research basically means you're going to try and make your magical part of your empire a little bit stronger. So research is get some spells or potentially scribe some spells and put them out into your empire to be used. And the last thing you can do is the most exciting part of this game. You can tax people.
I actually love the idea of, hey, guess what? We are the mighty Elk Empire. We have a spell. We've got one spell for the Orc Empire. Don't use it too quickly.
No.
Because then you've got to wait two turns if we can use it again. But we've got a spell.
And we'll tax you for that spell. So there are the four things you can do. You can recruit, you can build, you can research, or you can collect tax. Now, the really good thing about this game is that it goes round and round and round in clockwise order like so many games do, but like a few games do,
yes.
If I'm the lead player, I do my thing. And then if the player to my left wants to do it and has the appropriate available thing, they can follow me.
As you two said, I will follow. Walk away, walk away, walk away, walk away. But I will follow. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Having an 80s flashback.
Just as an aside, Leon's not here to edit the show, so Mark's going to be talking a lot and will appear in unedited versions of this show. So look, it's got the mechanic a la Glory to Rome, a la Food Truck Champion,
so many games
where it keeps each player engaged in that the first player, the lead player, whoever's turn it is, gets to do a thing. But what is different about this is that the first player or the lead player doesn't get an advantage. Everyone gets the same level of turn if you're following. And that is remarkable because people will choose to not do the thing that is good for them entirely because it is also good for everybody else. And I'll use the very clear example, which is tax.
Oh, yes.
Now, tax is how you'll very simply and very easily earn more food or more mana or more ore. And the rates of those things are either 4 or 3 or 2. So 4 mana, 3 food, 2 ore, or some combination thereof. Now, if it's my turn and I choose to tax, I'm going to choose, do I want 4 ore or 3 food or 2 mana or whatever the rates are at that particular time, because it's always going to be 4, 3 or 2.
Yeah. It's a little sort of track that moves around. Yeah. Each time you do the taxing action, then whatever the top one is at 4 goes down to 2. Correct. And the others move up.
So I'll do that. And then I go to the player to my left. Would you like to copy me? And as long as they have an available serf in their kingdom, they can do that.
Mm.
But they don't have to take the same resource that I took. So I could take 3 ore because that's what I believe is the most important to my engine building. They could take 4 food if food happens to be at the top. Or they could take 2 something or others because they're copying the action, not the reward that you get for that. And that becomes incredibly important as the game progresses.
Although the other thing I was going to say is the flip side of that is unless you're a puny human who has a particular building upgraded to a particular level, you can only do each of those capital actions once, which means if I choose to follow you, Garth, when, let's say, mana was worth 4, ore was worth 3, and bread, food, was worth 2, and I really need food because food is the primary resource for recruiting more serfs and warriors and even when you get to your heroes, well, food's only worth 2. But I can do it for free almost by using a serf when you do your turn, or do I wait so then once you do your tax, they all move up one step, and then now there's 3 food, and so I could do tax on my action, get 1 more food, but I've used an action.
And this is where Leon would say, oh, it's like some kind of game.
but you're right. It is an interesting decision, you know. Like, do I follow because basically it gives me a free action, or do I wait and do it later for it to be worth more, but that's one less thing that I can do in a turn when you can not do a lot of things each turn.
So what you've said there is that it's a free action.
Yeah.
And free action it is very much not. The reason for that is because
you're surfing it up.
Everyone gets 2 actions as part of each round, but in order to follow, you don't spend your action, let's call them cubes,
shields,
for the sake of argument.
Shields.
You spend your serfs, you spend your people to be able to do that. And if you don't have available people, you can't follow actions.
Serfs up, dude. Oh my God.
And numerous times during the game, you will find that you have no people to do that because they're out gallivanting through the countryside or doing something else. So managing your own internal economy in terms of the number of people you have is a vitally important part of this game.
And look, I just got to jump in and say a hilarious moment for me. I'd appeared on Leon's Island because of a, I don't know, was it like one of the things I flipped that let me basically put someone anywhere in the world? And I put it right next to Leon's capital on a completely different island from where I wasn't. And like, hey, here I am, Leon, look out. And of course, Leon charged out with everything he could at me and then proceeded to bag me out for the rest of the game because I had drawn all of his serfs out of the capital. He used them to power up his attack to defeat me, but then had no serfs in the capital with which to follow actions.
That was hilarious.
That was so funny.
And who won the game?
Leon.
So look,
but it was funny while it happened.
We've talked about half the actions you can do.
The other half?
And all of those actions that we've just discussed, recruit, build, research, or tax, can all be followed by rival players as long as they have their available serf. The next four actions cannot be copied by anyone except yourself. And yourself has to have an available serf to be able to do it. The first one is march, which is move your people across the board. And you will be doing that because you want to fight things or you want to collect resources. Because every one of the regions on your island or wherever you're able to march, if you have a serf or, given some upgrades, a warrior, you'll be able to collect some resources, the food, the ore, or the mana. So you want to march. The second action that you'll be able to do in this one is sail. And the only reason you're going to be able to do that is if you've invested enough money to basically produce your ship. And you want to do the ship because how else are you going to get from your island to one of the other three islands to fight everyone else? Well, you're going to have to recruit or build your ship.
As a podcast based on an island south of another island, we know this well, that water is a problem.
Absolutely.
And in this game with four individual islands, and yes, you can build a flying ship, but it's even more expensive.
Oh, my God, you just spoiled the next action, Mark.
Sorry. Boats are super important.
So, yes. The next action you can do, as Mark alluded to, is a flying ship or a flying vessel where you
fly with me.
You can just move around as much as you want.
Fly away.
The rule is, you can never end your movement in an ocean space, presumably because you'll sink, but that doesn't happen. And then the last action you can take, which can only be copyable by you, is cast, which, remember how you could do some research to get those spells out?
We had one spell!
Well, now you can cast it. And that means you get to spend generally mana, but sometimes other resources, and cast a spell and do whatever it says on the card and flip it completely the wrong direction, and it'll take a couple of goes to recharge and reload.
And when we say spells, like, let's give an example. So I had a spell. We talked about you've got on each space on the board, I think we talked about it, you've got tokens that when you explore that space, one of the four X's, you flip it over and you get whatever the thing is. Now, in some cases, they're just resources. In some cases, you open up a portal that if you find a second portal, you can have a sort of like a wormhole between islands. Sometimes you find almost free troops and lots of other things.
Sometimes you get completely shafted too. Yes. Like, they're not all good.
And I forget what I was saying.
Something about casting.
That's right. So I had a spell that let me basically randomly flip over any two tokens anywhere in the world, not just on my island, but anywhere in the world. Now, as you alluded to, it was probably about 60, 70% good, 30, 40% bad in the tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, in fact, one of those tokens that let me appear, poof, right next to Leon's capital and lay some little smack down next to him. A spell like that, where normally you've got to march out and you've got to get on a ship and you've got to sail across to get to another island, to be able to just flip a token in someone else's island is incredibly powerful.
Oh, it's hugely advantageous.
And other spells were even more powerful.
Yes. So look, this game, very simple rule set, but it gets very complicated very quickly. And the reason for that is that if you choose to start upgrading your own empire, and as I've already said, everyone has their own player board, there are three stages of bonuses that you're able to get. So if I have been able to build, say, a cathedral in my city, The level one bonus might be all my warriors get an extra point when fighting. Woohoo, that's good. But if I choose to upgrade that a second time, which again costs a lot of resources to be able to do, then they're going to get that bonus, plus they're going to get something else, which might be they can collect resources as if they were a serf. And then the third level of that, which costs a huge amount of resources to actually get to, they're going to give you beaucoup, amazing benefits that come with that. But the problem is, this is a fighting game.
No, it's not, Garth.
And it's an exploring game.
Yes.
And it's a resource collection game. And it's a I'm going to pick on that particular player and exterminate them game.
Yeah, and area control. I mean, really, it's almost like in this 4X game, there are four strategies. And so you need to decide, are you going to explore, expand, exploit, or exterminate. Which, but where are you going to go?
The problem is you can't. You have to do a bit of everything, and then only at some point in the game can you decide to have a singular focus.
I don't know I agree.
This is where I believe our opinions divide on this particular game. Because this game, which we struggled to get through in 4 hours... You and I both had cars parked in car parks were closing about 10 minutes before we were potentially close to finishing this game. It's just so long. And there are so many fiddly bits and pieces once you start upgrading your various capitals and buildings and what have you. It's just... oh, so much information you're trying to collate into a coherent strategy. Oh, man.
Well, Garth, let me jump in.
Oh, man.
Let me jump in. Look, I'm not saying this is my favourite game ever, for sure. Nowhere near that. However, I feel like there are certain game groups, and I feel like there are a lot of them, where this game might be their perfect game. It certainly scratches so many itches. And firstly, I'm thinking of, let's say, the people who love an epic event like, say, a Twilight Imperium. You know, that massive event day, you know, you normally, it's taking you like 8 hours to play that game. And the thing that grinds me into the dirt about Twilight Imperium is, whilst Garth is having his turn, then Trent is having his turn, and then Carl is having his turn, then Aaron is having his turn. I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs, looking at my technology tree, thinking, okay, I know I had a plan, but by now I've forgotten what it was and I need to start from scratch again.
And listeners, just put yourself in the position of us when we have to wait for Mara.
That's right. Yet there's this game that beautifully, I would say, I don't use that word a lot, apart from my beautiful partner, Sarah.
And the art of every game ever.
That's right. That beautifully employs the follow action so that almost every turn I am thinking, is Liam going to do the taxing that I want? And then I'll be able to follow because I've kept a surfer specially to do that. Or even, is Liam going to march? Because I think he's going to march towards me and then I'm going to be involved in the battle. So there's so little downtime. Look, there's, I get what you're saying. There's potentially a lot of thinking time before I act. And it's hard to think too far before your turn because the board state can change so
absolutely
much.
I agree with you there.
But the fact that you can follow, if you manage your resources, if you manage your serfs, you can follow potentially... You know, I'm last player. The three people that go before me, I can already have had three turns before it then gets to my turn. You can set up your go so well. Excuse me. You can set up your go so well before it's even your go. And for me, that was why first massive tick for this game. Yes, it plays long, but you're engaged it almost every step of the way. There was no 20, 30 minutes of, Oh, hurry up.
Hurry up, Mark.
Exactly.
I mean...
It's true.
No, look, you're right.
There was no downtime point like that where I just thought, oh, come on, kill me now.
Well, we tried to kill you now. You did. But you were the orcs in your flying crocodile trying to go and kill everybody else. So, look, you're right, unfortunately. You are constantly engaged. The challenge I have with this game is that more than likely you're going to have one or two of these endgame conditions trigger, which is one of those particular four X's, and that doesn't finish the game. What it does is trigger the end of game, which means once someone has been exterminated or once all the exploration tokens have been flipped over or once someone has been able to build the three towers, which are three structures that they're able to have, or once someone has been able to do something else, then you do that round and then you do one whole other round. And at the moment, one whole other round is about 45 minutes.
Yes, yeah, it is. It's quite a bit
long, long time. And that, when it's a four-hour game, just drags. I would much rather have an end-of-game condition, which is, all right, let's finish it up and let's get this party finished, because you're pretty much done by that point.
No, Garth. You are so wrong. I'm sorry. I wish Leon was here to back me up. But
is he? He's right here. Garth's all right. You're very right.
The thing that I... Another point of that I loved about this game is, you know, it's not going to be... Bing, end of game. Sorry, you thought you were going to get one more turn, but you missed out because it was... The person who came after you ended the game, not the person who came before you. So at least you know you're going to get minimum two more actions. Obviously, as we said, if you keep your serfs up your sleeve, you're going to get to do some following. So you're able to roll out your strategy. And look, let's face it, you got to have some strategy in this game. Now, I was the orcs, as we've said. Now, traditionally... I'm not a let's go out and smash everyone type of guy. But it sort of forced my hand in this game because pretty much all my abilities for my characters and all my bonuses for upgrading buildings were all around more attacking, stronger attacking, being able to attack more, being able to put more people into the attack. Are you getting the theme?
Orc smash.
I had to go out and smash stuff, and it sort of forced my hand a bit. But it was good, and I do take on board what you say. You've got three levels of buildings. You've got your three levels of capital. You've got your three different heroes. There is a lot to be looking through and a little bit of bookkeeping of, okay, so I'm in the battle. I've got a warrior. I've got a serf. I've got a hero. This guy's worth his money. This guy has got a second level of building, which gives him this ability. You do have to think it through a bit.
We have not even talked about battles. And that's a deliberate thing. Because battles, you need to have your calculator and your set square.
Oh, no.
And you need to have something else because each side has natural strength that is then modified by something else, which is then affected by the level of your capital. Plus, you've got cards that you can throw into the mix. Plus, should you want to, you've got to be able to pay for some spell cards that you may or may not use.
We haven't
and
even
And then you've got to be able to
the
have the resources
cards.
To be able to think. So, look. If you want a proper review of this, jump online and just watch some videos. If you want a proper how to play, go to Watch It Played and Rodney Smith he'll lead you through it. But look, the fighting of this game is some of the most stupid, unnecessarily paperworky thing in the game. You should be quite able to go, you have some orcs, I have some humans, they fight. And let's get a clear result.
Look,
and you don't.
Probably my biggest bone of contention with this game is not about the fighting. It's about the fact that, you know, we all have three heroes. There's sort of like a warrior-type hero, a mage-type hero, and some other type of hero. You know, a vague mishmash of character traits. But when I'm an orc, my biggest hero... Did 5 damage in battle, and he carried a great log and smashed people over the head with it. But Garth, your puny human hero.
Hang on, he's a swashbuckler or a mage or a paladin.
But your big hero, battle hero, how much damage did he do in battle?
Paladin at 4 was my biggest.
Wasn't he the same as... I just remember looking around and the stats for the heroes...
They're all
even though they had different same. Abilities, the stats were almost identical, which for me was wrong.
Thematically, it's a bit stupid.
Even in terms of your, you know, your serf is worth one battle point and your warrior is worth two battle points. Now, everyone knows my orc warriors are worth 3 human warriors and 5 elf warriors. But for the sake of the game, they're pretty much all identical. Now, your capitals and your capital board and your building abilities were what differentiated the races. I would have actually loved to see more differentiation. Mm. But let's get back to the battles just briefly. Those battle cards where everyone has the same set, another lost opportunity, and hopefully in another expansion they do change. You've all got a set and you want to work out whether you're going to charge or whether you're going to...
Siege.
Or whether
retreat.
You're going to conscript or... Basically, a little bit of rock, paper, scissors where for some abilities there was another card that would cancel that ability, but you really needed to try and get into the head of the other person. Like, okay, so I'm attacking Garth here. I'm winning.
You don't
know. Is he going to do the thing that's going to get him extra thing? But then if I play my thing that cancels out the thing, well, that means Garth has to play the other thing. And you start to try and work out what's he most likely to do. But if he thinks what I'm going to do, it's a mental puzzle.
No, it's not.
No?
Because all of those battle cards cost resources. And quite simply, you can look at your opponent's player board and go, what resources haven't they got? Okay, well, they can't afford to play that card. They can't afford to play that card. They can't afford to... Okay, they now have 2 cards that they can choose to play.
Yeah.
That one's not relevant. Okay, they're going to play this one. So what do I do? I'm clearly going to win this battle. What's not going to be affected by the one card that they have the ability to play? Oh, that one. And in almost every battle, the 2 rival players were down to maybe 2 cards each.
But that's potentially because... We were leaving ourselves short of resources, which meant we were limited by which...
Not we. I was resource heavy.
You were. Which card you could pick. And I, as a counterpoint, I will say those battles where my opponent, maybe it was you, had a lot of resources, made that decision really tricky because, like, he could play any of these 8 cards. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And then I got to look at, well, what could be the most damaging to me? What's the most likely... What's the sneakiest thing that Garth could do? Because that's what he always does. You know, that mental puzzle of trying to get in your opponent's head to think about what he could do. Because those cards can, A, make a big difference in the battle, but B, more importantly, you get victory points for playing those cards. So sometimes you wanted to go into a battle planning on losing it because, A, you get a point, a victory point, in a game where...
You start the battle.
Well, the final scores were, was it like 40s to 50s?
No, I think I came last at 36, and yeah, okay. I think Leon came first at 45. Yeah. So the spread was quite narrow.
So, but you get 1 point just for starting a battle, and then potentially you get 2, 3, I don't think you get 4, maybe 3 was the maximum, points for being able to play the card in the battle regardless of the outcome. Now, I must admit, I loved that because I was like, I'm going to go in and smash. Who cares if I win? I'm going to get 4 victory points for starting a battle and playing this card. Yes, I'm going to lose some pieces. I'm going to lose some resources. I'm going to lose some serfs or warriors, which is going to reduce slightly my effectiveness
for
future turns. And then I've got to recruit again and get them back. But on the other side, the victory points that I get from those things make it worthwhile. So it was great because it wasn't about the most powerful person is just going to charge through and win everything. There were other things to do, and there's lots you can do in this game to win, and you don't have to fight.
Yes, you do.
You've got to defend, but you don't have to go out and be aggressive, and so many people don't want to do that.
That's not true because I was the least fighty person in all of this game, and I came,
and you came last.
By a long way.
But not because you didn't fight.
Yes, because I didn't fight.
Okay, maybe because you didn't fight.
I had the most developed capital city.
You did.
And the only one to reach the third tier.
Yeah, that's right.
I had the most developed cities in that I had built the most buildings. Up until the very last battle, which I didn't want to be a part of, someone called let's just say it's close to Kark, and he's opposite myself in the radio, chose to fight with me.
Yep.
And I only got maybe one victory point, and you might have got four or yep. three or whatever the case may be. I didn't want to fight. I was make love, not war, man.
I think.
And I came deadest of last.
Well, Leon and I were first and second, and definitely Leon and I started more fights.
Yes.
That's the thing for me. You don't have to finish the fight. You have to be in the fight.
Correct.
And if you started, it's better because obviously you get that bonus victory
yeah,
point.
Yeah, so this is where my problem is because I think from a scoring point of view, there is much more focus on the exploitation and, more importantly, the extermination side of this game.
So no one got exterminated in our game. In fact, no one even really came close. But as I said, to me, where this game is – perfect is a good word. Where this game is fantastic, I think, for some groups is if you love that big mini-fest sitting down and normally it takes you – 4, 5, 6, 8 hours to play, you learn this game, you'll smash it out in 3 and there's no downtime.
Smash it out in 3
Yeah, that's
hours.
Right.
All right. I think a game we talked about recently, Crusaders, though we'll be done, I would much rather sit down and play that for 1 hour than this for 4 hours again.
Look, it does scratch a little bit of the same itches, you know, with the building upgrades and everything. Garth, we've talked about this so much.
We need to go to a song, and then, Mark, you've got to do some news. So we are the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we'll be back after this song.
Why is your heart so confused?
This is Chris from Canberra, and when I want to hear content relevant to me, an Australian board gamer in a country town that thinks it's a capital city, I listen to the Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was Angie Hart with Nullarbor Plain. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and it is time for Mark to present his not so regular but regular enough.
Oh, Garth, there has been a lot of news lately because there's been some big events. I know if it's the biggest, but certainly amongst the gaming trade, this is one of the more important of the year, the Gamma Trade Show, the Game Association Marketing, actual game-making people, game-making the games.
Convention.
They all go along to the trade show and they talk about games, surprisingly enough, and then quite a bit of news about upcoming releases comes out of this thing. Now,
what is that news, Mark?
One of the more exciting things about the news is Stronghold Games at the Gamma Trade Show revealed some details of the fifth and final big expansion to Terraforming Mars called Terraforming Mars, Turmoil.
Ooh.
Now, Turmoil is the only Terraforming Mars expansion that's going to be released in 2019, and it is labelled as an expert expansion, meaning for more experienced players. Why? Because it involves politics. Mm. Mars has established a Martian Senate composed of several parties, each with their own agenda. The Red Party is interested in keeping Mars pristine and untouched. The Green Party, they want full terraforming. The Kelvinists, they want more heat, etc., etc., etc. Now, players can place delegates trying to gain control of parties or even the entire Senate.
Delegates.
Delegates, yes. And there are a face-up line of new card, a new type of card called an event card, these global events showing what influences each party will have over the next several turns. They include things like dust storms, bless you, riots, rising alloy demand, something that gives you an ability to plan for the future.
Ooh.
Of course, this expansion includes new corporations and new projects expected to hit Kickstarter in April or May, so not far away.
Do you know anyone who might know anything about this expansion?
Well, I do know, funny you should mention, Stronghold Games Empresario, the Don of Stronghold Games, Stephen Bonacore. And in fact, I, Gus going on one of his 20 sneeze binges.
Woo.
I will be interviewing Stephen Bonacore, the head honcho of Stronghold Games, in just over a week's time. And I can't wait to grill him about the behemoth That is terraforming Mars.
Surely there's got to be a big box expansion somewhere.
Who knows? Hopefully we'll find out. He's already told me he's not going to give me an exclusive. Bless you again. But it'll be fun to talk to Steve Bonacore. He's a fantastic guy. Terraforming Mars, I've just picked up a copy.
I know! It might not even be counterfeit.
Well, who knows? We'll see. Picked it up from a local friend. Anyway, also at Gamma, Asmodee North America announced that they entered into an agreement with Seamon to exclusively distribute the publisher's board and tabletop games in North America. Now, I hear you say, but we, as in at least half of the people who listen to this podcast, are in Australia. What do we care about?
Correct.
Well, Seamon, they're such a massive company with Zombicide, Arcadia Quest, Blood Rage, Rising Sun, Song of Ice and Fire Miniatures. We've been hearing about how much money they've been losing lately. In my last couple of news items, I've talked about how they've been losing money. This may be a way they're looking at not losing money, which, bless you, may also mean maybe they'll consider doing it in other parts of the world. Now, currently, Seamon in Australia is distributed by few companies, VR Distribution, Let's Play Games, Aetherworks, amongst others, but we'll be interested to see if this happens where they're basically handing over their distribution from Seamon to Asmodee. So we'll keep our eyes open for that one. Now, also at Gamma, Gale... bless you, Gale Force 9.
Am I close to 8 yet?
I've lost count. Gale Force 9, maybe it was 9, reveal the sneak peek of their upcoming reprint of the board game classic Dune. Now, back in August last year, Gale Force 9 announced they'd reached a multi-year licensing agreement with Legendary Entertainment and Herbert Properties to bring the expansive Dune sci-fi franchise to tabletop gaming. Bless you. With plans to release several products, including board and miniatures games, just prior to the release of the new Dune movie in 2020.
When in 2020 is it being released?
I don't know. I'd be curious to see. I'm guessing towards the end, maybe. Anyway, there was no confirmation at the time that they were going to reprint the classic Dune board game, which so many people, it's their holy grail game. I have actually played it, bless you, many, many, many years ago, and it's damn good. I didn't like the re-theme of it in the Warhammer 40K universe, I think, or the Terranoff universe. I can't remember what it is. I can't even remember that game. It was horrible. But I'm excited about the reprint of Dune. And to heighten your excitement, listeners, the original co-designers, Peter Alotka and Bill Eberle, are going to be working on this new project. Bless you, Garth.
Thank you.
So, more Gamma news. An as yet unnamed variation on an escape room game by Cranio Creations, who have recently produced such board game classics as Newton and Lorenzo il Magnifico.
Which has just been put on Kickstarter as an electronic version.
Mm. So they've got a new game. It's composed of a cardboard box frame the size of a standard square board game box where cards slot into the top of the box and the sides of the box have open windows to peer into through which you can see the cards revealing objects and clues. An app, I believe, tells the player how these objects will relate to the story and how to react. Ooh. If you remove a certain card, you can peer down a certain hallway and thus the escape experience expands.
The escape experience expands.
That's right. It sounds quite fascinating. Ooh. And I'm really curious to see how this goes when it comes out later in the year. Now, before I move on to my last couple, Garth, I believe you've got some hot news about the Phantom board game.
Oh, my God, have we ever. So a couple of years ago at PAX, I was very lucky to interview Alex Winter with a little bit of sneaky news saying that he had entered into a little bit of a partnership with Frew Games to release a Phantom game. And it's finally, as of about 2, maybe 3 hours ago, launched on Kickstarter. It is a 1-6 player co-op or semi-co-op or competitive game where you will be trying to do something or other involving the Phantom. Now, it's asking a very modest $51,000 Australian, which when you convert it to US dollars is about 30-something or other. It's already at, let's say, about, 25% funded already first 3 hours?
Yeah.
And it's definitely worth checking out. I'm very curious. We haven't been given any inside word on this, apart from a little bit of 24 hours notice on what the Kickstarter page is going to look like. So it's called The Phantom Treasures of Drakon. And I'm very curious to see how it looks. It's got beautiful little minis. It's got a board. It's got multiple gameplay modes. Well,
it's produced in conjunction with Fru Publications.
Well, I was just about to get to that.
Produced the Phantom. The Phantom. Comic.
It's got art by the actual Phantom artists.
That's right. Big Glenn Ford. Anyone who knows the Phantom knows the name Glenn Ford, that's for sure. The person who's written the story, I think Dale McCanty, is a Phantom writer.
So
there's a lot going for this game.
I'm really curious to see how it goes. Don't know any gameplay mechanics. Don't know anything more than you can see on the Kickstarter page. But jump on to Kickstarter. Check out the Phantom Treasures of Drakon board.
Look, couple more quick things before we go. Root by Leader Games won the Tabletop Game of the Year award at South by Southwest, which big convention, has a lot of music, has a lot of video games, having a growing tabletop presence, and that's great to see. Previous winners have been Gloomhaven, Arkham Horror the Card Game, Pandemic Legacy Season 1, so congratulations to Root there. If you would have seen our Facebook page, facebook.com/dicemancometh, you would have seen that Die Hard, the Nakatomi Heist board game, is coming out by USAopoly this autumn. Based on the movie, of course, so check that one out.
If there isn't a 3D building structure, I'm out.
Look, a special note for Leon, the second Talisman game for 2019, Talisman Batman Supervillains Edition, is coming out. Dire Wolf Digital is partnered with HBO to produce Game of Thrones Oathbreaker, a social deduction game set in the Game of Thrones universe. And finally, Gale Force 9 will release a cooperative survival game based on the Aliens movie entitled Aliens, Another Glorious Day in the Core, where you'll play Space Marines searching for survivors where your colony's overrun by xenomorphs.
We are absolutely, positively out of here. If you haven't got your entry into the BorderCon competition, email us at dicemencometh@gmail.com. Send us a tweet to @dicemencometh. Send us an Instagram @dicemencometh. Facebook us on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/dicemencometh. You have only until midnight, Wednesday the 3rd of April, to do so. We've got to go and play Descent.
Oh, yes.
Which you haven't done for years. So I'm Garth.
I'm Mark.
I'm Leon. And we are the Dice Men Cometh for episode 55 on Thursday the 28th of March, and we will be back next week.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.